listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What this movie is saying is that women like being hurt and like being used, and that you as a man are entitled to use women. I just can't think of a worse thing to be teaching our young men.
The fallen world sniffs out this alien smell of the resurrection on you and will seek to stamp it out. It recognizes it for the threat that it is. The principle of this world is death.
If salvation is my personal relationship with Jesus, it makes our problem somehow having an emotional or personal distance from God. So it completely takes the idea of sin out of the question.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues, etc.
It's nice to know that the events that are depicted for us in the New Testament, the Old Testament for that matter, actually took place in time and space. Space is one of those things that, well, you know, as far as we can tell, just doesn't change much. Although over time, where something actually occurred can get pretty rubbed out, pretty erased. And that's what you would expect realistically, with something like the childhood home of Jesus. We got a good idea about the site of the crucifixion, of the burial, of other sites that are significant in Jesus' ministry. But his childhood home, since those years are couched in, well, obscurity as far as the New Testament says, we know the town, Nazareth, or at least where he originally hailed from, but should we expect to find something as specific as his childhood home? Well, at least one archaeologist says, yes, he may have actually found it. I was looking at a picture earlier. It's obviously a very, very old site. It's under an existing building, but looks like a home to me. Now, is it that of Jesus of Nazareth? It's in the right spot. It's in Nazareth or nearby, but is it the right spot? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 3rd of March. We're going to talk about this alleged discovery of the childhood home of Jesus. Dr. Craig Evans will join us in the first few minutes, a little bit later. We will continue our regular series with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller responding to evangelical proof text today, John chapter 1, verse 12, how one is born again. Now, our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, always feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the alleged discovery of the childhood home of Jesus, Dr. Craig Evans. He's a regular guest. He's professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College in Nova Scotia, Canada, author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
When it comes to this site, what in your mind is the strongest piece of evidence that would suggest it's the authentic childhood home of Jesus, as some are asserting it may well be?
Well, actually, Todd, there are three things that come together. Number one, the house is 1st century B.C., C.E., right there. It's the right age. And as you said in your preliminary remarks, it's in the right place. It's in Nazareth. The other thing that is in favor of it is that it ceased to be a family home in the middle of the 1st century A.D. I think that's very significant, and I'll explain why. According to the book of Acts, according to Eusebius, the church historian, the family of Jesus moves to Jerusalem sometime in the infancy of the early church. That means they're not living at the home in Nazareth any longer. The second thing, and that's an analogy with what may be the house of Peter, or at least his father-in-law and his mother-in-law in Capernaum, the same thing happened. Sometime in the middle of the 1st century, the house ceased to be a private family dwelling. And so it's the same thing. People started meeting there. They plastered the walls white so they could see better. They put lamps in. They removed the stove. It just ceased to be a place where people lived. Instead, it became a place where people met. So that's a second factor in favor of Ken Dark, Professor Dark's identification of this house as possibly the house where Jesus grew up. Then there's a third factor, and it was designated fairly early on in the Byzantine era, probably the 4th century, where it was honored, it was decorated. There was a sense that this is the place, and so that's fairly early. And again, you can compare that with the house of Peter at Capernaum, and it goes from being a meeting place in the 1st century on into the 2nd century, and by the time we get to the Byzantine period of time, it's become an octagonal-shaped church. And so what we see is something similar at Nazareth. So as I agree with Professor Dark. You know, you can't prove that it was the house that Jesus grew up in, but there isn't anything about this house that's been found, at least so far, that would suggest that it can't be.
Let's talk about those three factors in the order that you gave them to us. First of all, the town of Nazareth. What are we talking about in the first century there, and what survives of it today?
Well, not a whole lot. We actually, of course, have the house that's thought to be the house of Mary that's not far away. And the house of Mary is the same thing. It's 1st century B.C., so it's old enough. The archaeology has confirmed its age. And it's the same thing. Early on, it was recognized as a special place, and it was marked out accordingly and came to have churches and different things built over it. And, of course, today is the Church of the Annunciation that was built in 1969. The IAA, the Israel Antiquities Authority, began a dig just across the street. I've been there. I know the very spot. And so they did some work there because there was plans on building something. And you know how it is in Israel. You don't just start bulldozing the ground without checking it first because of antiquities. And sure enough, they didn't dig down very far. And this is a woman who is an archaeologist, Yardeni Alexandre, and they found what they believe is a 1st century B.C. House there in Nazareth. And so she wonders, you know, it's clearly part of the same village, part of the same neighborhood, as it were. And so this is about it, what I've just described. You've got 2, 3, maybe 4 houses all together. There's a little bit at the Nazareth Village as well, near the YMCA, that's been uncovered, some foundations, a wine press. But there's not much because it's a living city. There are 65,000 people who live in Nazareth, and you just can't dig underneath buildings. You can't dig up streets. So, you know, it's difficult to do archaeological work in a living city.
The second thing that you mentioned was kind of the time frame when it ceases to be a family home. It even at some point seems to overlap with a burial place as well that I think, at least in the article that I read, has been associated with the burial place of Joseph, Jesus' stepfather. But what does it become? Does it become, in effect, a mid-first century church, do you think, at that point? A shrine?
No, there's no evidence that I'm aware of that suggests that. And that's the one point where the Jesus house, if I may call it that, the Jesus house in Nazareth is weak compared to the Peter house in Capernaum. When the Peter house in Capernaum ceased to be a family dwelling, we know that because it was transformed into a public meeting house. I don't see that in what's been published so far. I've been in touch with Ken Dark the last few days, great fellow. He has sent me some of his studies. I've had a chance to read them. I've looked at some of his photographs. It's a significant place. It's well worth studying. But if we saw evidence that it became a Christian meeting place in the first century, then I would say probability begins to tilt in favor of the identification. But with what we actually have, I don't know. I can't make up my mind. It remains possible. It isn't excluded. But I don't think the evidence requires us to say it's probable. And then you mentioned the tomb thought to be Joseph's. That's not very good. If it's a sacred spot, you're not going to have a tomb of Jesus in a house. This is a tomb that must be later, because the Jewish people would allow for tombs to be placed in areas where people used to live. I think that's pretty clear, not where people are still living. But I just find that a little strange. That would be like finding a tomb in Capernaum, you know, at Peter's house. That's most unlikely. So that, for me, is something I'm still puzzling over. I think it creates a problem. I'm very skeptical. Joseph would have died in the early first century, probably when Jesus was a young man, very likely before his ministry began. I can't believe that he would then be buried in a house that's still a living house. That would not have happened. Why would his body be exhumed and relocated? Again, that I find very strange. So I suspect that's a later burial, has nothing to do with Joseph. The motivation may have been to bury this person close to the spot where Jesus grew up. But I think there's a lot more study and thinking about that before we draw conclusions.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about the alleged discovery of the childhood home of Jesus in present-day Nazareth. He is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College in Nova Scotia, Canada, and author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. A few more minutes with him on the other side of the break. We'll talk about that early attribution as being a site. You can purchase his book at our website, issuesztc.org, and click Listen on Demand. We'll be right back.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll talk about the alleged discovery of the childhood home of Jesus in Nazareth. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. Dr. Evans, I'm intrigued by something you said before the break, your conversations with the principal archaeologist here, but also the photos. I've seen one photo of kind of a carved-out doorway out of what appears to be like a limestone cliff face, and there's some walls that seem to be built up from that cliff face. What do we see? What is this actual site look like? And when we picture a house, we don't picture a house like a modern-day house. What is there?
Well, you know, if you look at the house that's thought to have been the house where Mary grew up, it's similar. It's just not on a sloping hill like that. It's somewhat dug into the ground, like a split-level home where it has a bit of a basement. That was valuable because it created cool spots for the summer for storage of whether it was food or whatever. And so it's not that unusual. And so the actual ground floor, some of the steps would be carved out right out of bedrock. And again, it's limestone, and so it's not that difficult. We're not talking about granite. And so it makes a great foundation. It's a very stable home. And so it looks the same way, this house, this Jesus house. And but the difference is that Nazareth in places is on a slope. And so this seems to be a house that would have been on a slope that would have been terraced. And so we have an idea of what homes would have looked like in that condition. And so what you're seeing is a corner of the basement, as it were. And so you have some floor, you have some wall out of bedrock. How much of the stones, I haven't read all the reports, so some of the blocks that have been assembled and pieces of walls that you see, how much of that is first century, I don't know until I am able to look at all the reports.
And it exists currently underneath a convent there that was erected there in Nazareth. And what we're told, at least in the report, is that the site has been known since the mid-ninth or the late 19th century, but not really any serious excavation done there. How would you sort that out for us?
Well, that's not surprising. I was in Israel. I'm usually in Israel every year, and in 2013 I was there, and one of the places that we wanted to do some filming, it was a private home in Jerusalem. The woman had asked people to come and enlarge one of the rooms. They took down the wall, and to their surprise was an ancient wall behind the modern wall. And so they knocked it down, and here was a cavern that dates back to the Byzantine era, and nobody knew it was even there. So it's not strange to uncover things and be surprised. In Nazareth was what looks like a late Roman era bathhouse that was found. It was underneath a home. So like I said before the break, if we could do archaeology throughout Nazareth, which would mean digging under streets and homes and everything else, no telling what we would find, and it would just be astonishing.
The third and final element that you mentioned earlier in our conversation that is lends credence to the claims or to the possibility this might be the childhood home of Jesus is what you described as kind of an early attribution of it being just that. How would you describe that circumstance?
Well, you know, the Byzantines, obviously a lot of people are going to be naive and they're going to believe what the locals say, but you have continuity of memory. And Dr. Dark makes a point of that. There's no evidence from Josephus that the city of Nazareth was wiped out during the Roman Wars, the big one in 66 to 70, and also the Bar Kokhba War in 132 to 135. And so Nazareth probably survived these wars intact. And so you have a continuity of village memory. And so it's possible that when the Christians would visit and pilgrims, the locals just said, well, you know, this. I know you're a Christian, you believe in Jesus. Well, this is where he grew up. And so that's why there is a possibility they have it right, because this memory is passed on generation by generation. Now, I would find it, as I said earlier, I'd find it probable if we could see evidence of Christians meeting in the house in the first century, and that combined with village memory would tell me that it probably is. Because I can't believe they would get it wrong. They would, you know, they'd be pointing to this house when actually it's another house down the street. So that's what's helpful. But you know, what I would say now in summary and in conclusion is whoever lived in that house, that first century house in Nazareth, that family would have known Jesus and his family. So this is the kind of continuity we have. And so it's contextual. It's significant. And so whether Jesus himself lived in the house or if he lived a block or two away, that house needs to be studied because we will learn more about first century life in Nazareth.
Finally, before we let you go, you mentioned any kind of evidence that may eventually come up that Christians were meeting there. What would that evidence look like to you? What would be an example of that kind of evidence that said there, like the Peter House in Capernaum, there Christians were obviously gathering? What would it look like?
Well, what it would look like, there'd be evidence that it's not just an abandoned house, but it's a house for meeting, where people meet. That would be very significant, because who in the world would decide to transform a house into a meeting house? It's not a synagogue, so it's, you know, there aren't too many options left. The other thing is, somebody almost certainly would inscribe in a stone or on a piece of plaster a cross or some other Christian sign. And so if we found evidence like that reaching back to the first century, then I think it would tip probability in favor of identifying the house as the house where Jesus grew up.
Dr. Craig Evans is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College in Nova Scotia, Canada. He's author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to do it.
Folks, if you enjoy these teachings on biblical archaeology, you do not want to miss this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 19th and Saturday, June the 20th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. Dr. Paul Meyer is going to be making the case for biblical archaeology, and other speakers at the conference will include Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Dr. David Menton, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, Pastor Chris Rosebrough, and Pastor Will Whedon. Now, we almost have, just at this early date, about 100 registrants already, and our attendance is limited to 400 this year, given the size of our venue, so don't wait to register. People are registering fast and already. Find out more at issuesetc.org or contact Craig, craig@issuesetc.org, or give him a call, 618-223-8385. It's the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June the 19th and 20th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, our regular series with him on responding to evangelical proof text. Today, we're going to be in John chapter 1, where John, in his prologue, talks about those who believe in Jesus being given the right to become the children of God and how they become those children, how they are born again. Is it a matter of decision or of will? We'll find out right after this. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is a giant poster of Luther's Small Catechism. It's perfect for display in your home, Christian day school, or Sunday school. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Small Catechism giant poster by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, the Small Catechism giant poster.
This is Pastor Clint Poppe, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Grace, faith, Scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.